What's happening in the real estate market? Let's find out. We're joined by Chicago Magazine's Dennis Rodkin. New numbers came out this week. How does it look around here?
You know, it's looking better, Bob. One of the things I'm interested in is if you look at our price increases, including foreclosed homes, prices were in August up 7.8%. If you look without distressed homes, they were up 10.2%. The reason to make that distinction is it means that sellers of conventional homes are now kind of leading the way. You're not as much in competition with the foreclosures. That's been tapering off over the past several years, but it's just really nice to see these kinds of things turn so clearly. Foreclosures in the third quarter, mortgages past due were down at their lowest since 2008, and new foreclosures down at their lowest since 2007. The reason to push all that data out together is to say we seem to finally be putting that foreclosure crisis not in our rearview mirror, but we're starting to pull out ahead of it.
And once we get past that, then we can really see some positive action around here.
Yeah, yes, some positive action, but there's a new set of forecasts out today from a group of 108 economists from Zillow, and what they're saying is this year, 2013, nationally, is going to be the biggest set of price increases, home value increases, and then it tapers off. It's a little bit less in 14, less than that in 2015, and it's back to about 3% in, I think it's 2017. So this would be the big run-up.
By the way, I don't know. Have you ever used Zillow?
Yeah. Well, I use it. I actually use it a lot, Marianne, but you know, in the course of the day.
Well, what I've found with Zillow is that, like, the reality is nothing like what they post.
Tell what Zillow is.
It's a site that pretty much says the size of your house, how many rooms, you know, square footage and all that stuff, and then how much it's worth.
It estimates your value,
and it is ridiculous. I mean, like, it's off by, like, a lot of rooms and not even renovated rooms.
Less ridiculous now than it was just a few years ago, because I'm not on Zillow's dime, and I use a lot of the data that their economists come up with and things like that. On the home value estimators, though, I did a story on this a while ago. It's getting more accurate. Every day it gets more accurate because the more sales there are, the more data they have to push through their machine, the more accurate their estimates become. Several years ago, I probably sat right here or sat with Spike and said, yeah, it's not very accurate, but it gets refined with each sale that is anything comparable to your home.
Well, in 2008, when everything you know, bottomed out, it was horrible. And one of the first things that happened was that a lot of people who had home equity lines of credit, those were frozen.
Yeah.
And so our bank, we were with, what's the name of that bank? Countryside or Country?
Countrywide.
Countrywide, yeah.
That was
horrible, you know, bank.
And you know who set us up there? Our legal team, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
So we were with them.
And they did cheat. Yeah, it's true.
And then all of a sudden, you know, everything was frozen. It had nothing to do with our credit or anything else. And then they said, because on Zillow, your house is worth like a fifth of what we previously thought your house was worth, which was totally crazy. And you could not fight Zillow.
You could not fight Zillow. That, you know, that's 5 years ago, Marianne, and it was true. One of the things is they're based on the West Coast, and they got more accurate on the West Coast sooner than they got accurate here. But now I think their estimates are pretty close. It should never be the only estimate that anybody uses, but it's more accurate than it used to be.
Another story you were covering, Chicago area homeowners postponing a lot of work, now finally doing some renovation. I guess this would be good news for people who are in the construction business, isn't
it? I think it's very good news for people who are in the construction business that a lot of those jobs, you know, I wanted a new kitchen, but even if I was still employed, I had friends who were unemployed, or I had a credit lockdown like what Marianne's describing. So I put that off. And what the Remodeling Association is doing with a survey is finding out why people are doing remodeling, and they're finding that more than 8 out of 10, more than 80% of people say that it's because they put something off in the past. And, you know, I mean, when you look around your own home, there is some repair, remodeling, upgrade that you said, yeah, maybe we can wait. And then you wait a while and think, geez, this kitchen looks like it's 100 years old.
Or you just get used to it,
yeah, right,
and don't even see it anymore.
I don't even notice it.
Usually the husbands problem. Don't notice it anymore, but the wives do.
Yeah, exactly. New kitchen, please. That's what we need.
Yeah.
So how does renovating affect the prices or affect the numbers of people buying? Because if you can easily renovate because it's doable now, do you do that instead of buying a new place?
I think a lot of people are doing that. I think there are two pieces of that, Marianne. One is you do it because you can afford it, because your house may, if it's not still underwater, it's so slightly above water that you still can't afford to sell, because you need to have more than, you know, flat equity in order to be able to mm-hmm. afford to move to the next home. The other thing is you may be thinking, okay, the housing market is finally improving. I put off all those repairs a few years ago. Now I need to do them both so I can enjoy them now and so that my house is in better sellable shape, because it's definitely true that on the market these days, a house has to be move-in ready. Very few people buy a place and plan to do upgrades. So if those upgrades are ever going to happen, if I'm planning to sell in the course of the next few years, if I do it now, then I get that fancy new bathroom before I sell it to somebody.
Talking about building and projects, and this was in the news a week or so ago, Northwest Side, they have high hopes there for a big apartment tower at Division and Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
And was there some controversy about this? This seems like a pretty cool project for that area.
I don't recall the controversy. I'm not sure about that. But yeah, you know, first of all, rental building is huge. Construction of rental apartments is big. And in that area, in that whole sort of, let's just say, near Northwest Side, to pull the whole thing in together, population is booming. And it's the kind of place where I'm going to rent first and, you know, I get my roots put down and I'm going to end up buying. There are an awful lot of builders of rental apartments who are saying that, you know, we're building so much downtown, we need to feather out into the neighborhoods.
Yeah, they're moving in already. 99 rental units at 1611 West Division.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about that building. Right. Yeah, we talked about this briefly. I was in there when it was under construction. I have to say, I love it. It's super contemporary. It's got, I guess the best way to describe it is it has partial stripes. It's sort of windows and black stripes,
like,
and white
patterned
stripes. Yeah, it's difficult to describe, and it's also not exactly rectilinear. It has sort of a bowed front, and I think it's really cool as a piece of architecture. And having been inside the apartments, I apologize, I thought you meant a different building. Having been inside the apartments, I love the fact that you look out through a lot of glass, and upstairs on the roof there's a great rooftop deck with amazing views. I think people are upset because it doesn't fit into the old look of the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
but it seems to me if you're going to build a contemporary-style apartment building, Westtown, Bucktown, Wicker Park, that's kind of where you'd do it.
Yeah, and it's the apartment tower is 11 stories, so
yeah, it's not that big.
Yeah.
One of the complaints people had is that it was supposed to be a transit-oriented development. They advertised it as you're not really going to need a car, you're right on the blue line. And some of the complaints I've seen when I wrote a story and some others, some of the complaints are, well, it's not right on the blue line, it's across the street. Well, come on. You know, do you need somebody to drive you across the street to the
house? And it gets cold, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like walking in the cold, personally. So where are the best places to buy a home right now?
Wow. Well, actually, I think that neighborhood is super hot, though.
Still,
not,
it's not, like, overpriced at this point or at the top?
You're talking about that area around Ashland, Milwaukee, and Division.
Yeah, all around in there. And actually, before we get to that, Marianne, probably we should – there's further upgrade coming in there. That building is the beginning of a lot that could happen. That triangle – has been called the Polish Triangle,
right?
Because it was sort of the capital of the Polish neighborhood for a long time. And there's a lot coming, I guess it would be northeast of the apartment building on the other side of the triangle. There's a lot of improvement coming. You know, that's like the epicenter of hipness right now, and you expect a lot to improve.
I consult with my 20-something-year-olds about hipness.
On what's cool.
Actually, and so my question is always, all right, Logan Square, like that's where they say, oh, that's where all the great mm-hmm. bars are. We hang out there. But for 20 years that I've been here, I've been hearing that Logan Square is coming back. Is it really?
Yeah, you know what I think has happened is it had been coming back. It had slowly, but it's really picked up a lot faster in the last few years for a couple of reasons. One is, as we've talked about in here, young adults no longer go in temporarily to a city neighborhood and then bounce out to the suburbs when they have kids. So a lot of people put down roots, which means that there's not as much replacement space. I've got to move a little farther out. So everything sort of spreads, and rather than try to get into Bucktown, I go ahead and go to Logan Square. And I don't mean to say that people make that trade, but Logan Square has picked up on that renaissance of city neighborhoods. Its time was coming, and then its time finally did come. And you know, it's great. There's an awful lot when you get sort of to the west part of Logan Square. There's a lot that is still turning. There are some foreclosures that have been cleaned up. There are still some less expensive houses in the west part of the neighborhood. But, you know, it's a great neighborhood. You've got the Boulevard. You've got all the Boulevards, but you've got Logan Boulevard. You've got the Illinois Centennial Monument and restaurants like crazy, and they just keep opening. About a year ago, I did a story about how there were fewer restaurant closings in Logan Square than in most other neighborhoods, which was a sign of stability.
And before you leave, Dennis, what's the headline on this report here, the home listing report, the home values for different towns outside of Chicago?
Right.
What struck you about that? Anything in particular?
Well, I think it's something people might want to play with. It shows where listed, not sold, but listed four-bedroom homes are least expensive, most expensive in Illinois. It's from Coldwell Banker. I would imagine you guys could post a link to it. I have tweeted it if somebody went to my Twitter feed. The town with in Illinois with the most expensive four-bedroom listings is Oak Brook, not Winnetka, Lake Forest.
Wow, really?
And with the least expensive is Kankakee, which, though it's downstate, is not like way downstate, which I thought would have been lower on the list.
And why is it?
Why is Kankakee?
Yeah.
You know, Kankakee's, have you guys seen the downtown of Kankakee in the last?
I have not.
I hate to say it. It is, I mean, you could roll a bowling ball down the streets. Kankakee has suffered.
Yeah. And why Oak Brook?
Well,
like the North Shore.
There's a lot of retail out there, a lot of new restaurants out there. I know that.
Yeah, there are also a lot of it's what's listed on the market right now. And Oak Brook has a lot of very large square footage houses that were built, you know, in the 90s, that sort of thing. So people have a higher price tag pegged to that is one thing. And another would be the retail. And again, it's what's listed. I haven't looked closely, but I think sellers there could be a little more optimistic than sellers in Lake Forest.
It's fascinating to look at the home values on this list and find your town. We'll get that posted up. Facebook.com/Serrato Murciano. Dennis Rodkin, Chicago Magazine. Always interesting.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.